Well, hello and welcome to the Archaeology News Weekly. I am, of course, David Connolly, your host. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. Now, without further ado, let's get on with it. Apart from, let me tell you that the snow and wind has at last left Scotland, and I'm looking out on a beautiful blue sky. Hope you are as well. Anyway, the face of an Iron Age bog woman has been modelled by German researchers. New geoglyphs are found on Peru's Nazca Plateau, and grapes cultivated for wine are shown to be 8,000 years old. 2,500-year-old remains are found in New Jersey, but prehistoric rock shelters are under threat in Pakistan. Traffic diversions for Stonehenge visitors, the never-ending saga continues, while we look at ancient buildings being physical manifestations of Bronze Age societies. A pre-Columbian site in Mexico is dated to 1500 BCE, and changing our view of prehistory yet again, early modern humans had a life expectancy. Well, the same life expectancy, I should say, as Neanderthals. What does Iron Age beer taste like? Well, we'll find out. And we'll finish off with Neolithic sites discovered in southern India. Of course, remember, you can be listening to all of this on the Stone Pages Archaeo News app, as well as keeping up with the news as it happens. So, starting off today, in what is now Lower Saxony in Germany, archaeologists have begun studying the ancient remains of a woman found in a bog 6 years ago. Now, a team of German researchers present their findings in Hanover, including facial simulations of the bog woman dubbed Mura, whose body dates back more than 2,600 years. Experts from the University Medical Center Hamburg-Eppendorf generated a digital model of the bones, which was then used to make a replica of the bog woman's skull. Later, five German and British researchers produced a series of facial reconstructions, giving us a look into the face of a young woman who lived at the time when Rome was just a small village. After examining Mura's corpse, researchers estimated that she was between 17 and 19 years old at the time of her death. Her life was brief but grueling. The team determined the young woman suffered from malnutrition, chronic inflammation and curvature of the spine, as well as having a benign tumour at the base of her skull. The bones also show a pair of skull fractures due to blunt trauma. Experts said that Mura probably lived a life of intense physical labour and likely regularly carried heavy loads, such as water jugs, while roaming through the marshlands. Radiocarbon dating completed at the University of Kiel confirmed that the girl had died between 764 and 515 BCE. Despite researchers' efforts to learn more about Mura's life, however, the circumstances of her death remain a mystery. They determined the young woman was naked at the time of her death, and the absence of any clothing or jewellery at the site seems to suggest that the woman did not suffer a fatal accident. But the find also contradicts knowledge of common burial practices during the Iron Age, as most bodies then were cremated. So, what is it? What is the sad end of Mura? Well, now to Peru, where a Japanese research team reported it's discovered two new geoglyphs on the Nazca Plateau. The team, led by Masato Saki, a professor of Yamagata University, said that the newly discovered geoglyphs appeared to represent a human head and an animal. In 2006, the same team announced the discovery of about 100 new geoglyphs on the plateau, many in the form of straight and triangular lines. The new geoglyphs were found about 10 kilometres from northern Nazca, where gigantic geoglyphs of animals, fish and insects have been found. A temple is located near the site of the new discoveries. The geoglyph of what appears to be a human head measures around 4.2 metres long and 3.1 metres wide. The researchers confirmed parts that looked like two eyes, a mouth and the right ear. An analysis of earthenware discovered near the site indicates that the geoglyph of the human head was created in the early Nazca civilization period, or perhaps even earlier, which flourished between around 200 BCE and 600 CE. The other geoglyph of what appears to be an animal measures 2.7 metres long and 6.9 metres wide, but it's not yet known exactly when that was created. The team has filed a report on the new discoveries with Peru's culture ministry and now plan to look into relations between the newly found geoglyphs and the nearby temple. A new genetics study, not on humans, but on grapes now, finds that people first cultivated grapes for wine around 8,000 years ago. In the current proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, a team led by Sean Miles of Cornell University looked at 1,000 samples of the domesticated grape, Vitis vinifera, subspecies vinifera, and its wild relative, Vitis vinifera, subspecies sylvestris. I hope you're keeping up with that and taking notes. And comparing the gene maps across the grapes, the team concluded that humanity has only begun to explore the genetic diversity of the humble grape. The new study claims that grape domestication took place in the southern Caucasus between the Caspian and Black Sea, and that cultivated vinifera then spread south and to the western side of the Fertile Crescent, the Jordan Valley, that is in Egypt, by 5,000 years ago. Grape growing and winemaking then expanded westward towards Europe, but the degree to which the local wild sylvestris from Western Europe contributed genetically to Western European vinifera cultivars remains a contentious issue. The results of the study also support a model in which the modern Western European cultivars experienced introgression from local wild sylvestris. A new analysis suggests that the people had been conservative in crossing varieties after the earliest domestication of wild grapes. The researchers call for genetically guided cross-fertilization of grape varieties for increased hardiness. They see the grape as clearly exceptional in terms of its domestication and breeding history compared to most crops studied to date. You'll actually also find on Past Horizons, of course that's www.pasthorizons.com, you'll find a fascinating story about the grapes and the winery found in Armenia at Areni Cave. So if you just pop along there, type in Areni, A-R-E-N-I, you'll be able to read all about that fascinating site as well. Now, back to this fascinating site, we're now in New Jersey in the USA, where a $1.1 million archaeological dig that has been underway for months now as part of the proposed Scudder Falls Bridge replacement project near Ewing in New Jersey has turned up evidence that Native Americans lived at the site as long ago as 500 BCE. The most intriguing evidence is the physical remains of a large number of hearths where the Native Americans would have cooked food for storage and for daily meals. The dig started at the beginning of October with 10 people in the field and 2 in the laboratory working 40-hour weeks in all kinds of weather. That's archaeology for you. Lauren said that the archaeologists should be done digging in Ewing this week. Another dig, which is scheduled to begin within a month on a River Road in Yardley, is projected to take another 3 to 4 months. In Ewing, 2 weeks ago, the archaeological team found the charred remains of nutshells that might be evidence of Native American diet. About 10% of the artifacts found so far are tools, including projectile points, pottery markers used for drawing, Kemp materials and hammer stones. The artifacts have been taken from the site to an off-site lab where they are being cleaned, processed and catalogued. Some objects, such as ceramics that may contain plant or animal residues, are then sent to a specialised lab for analysis. When the project is done, the artifacts will be taken to the New Jersey State Museum, where other researchers, who may be interested in them, can also look and analyse them. It's nice to see a proper amount of money being spent to actually analyse and really record archaeological sites. The same, however, cannot be said of what's happening in Pakistan. About 30 rock shelters, some dating back to the Stone Age in Islamabad, Pakistan, and its surroundings have either been partially destroyed due to construction work or face the danger of being destroyed due to the negligence of the authorities. Rock shelters, shallow cave-like openings at the base of a cliff, are often important archaeologically because these sites form natural shelters from the weather. Prehistoric humans often used them as living places and left behind debris, tools, and other artifacts. According to the archaeologists, one of the oldest rock shelters in Islamabad is situated in Sector G13, but has become the victim of development work. A portion of it has been so badly damaged by developers that the city authorities don't seem to be at all concerned about the preservation of such ancient sites. During a recent survey of archaeological sites by the Taxila Institute of Ancient Civilizations, or TIAC, a large number of potsherds from the site were collected, which confirmed that the site had been used in prehistoric times. TIAC director Dr. Khan said that the excavations of these rock shelters could prove to be milestones in the archaeological history of the country. His team has already found pottery, tools and other utensils which indicate that further excavation could reveal some interesting facts about the people and the lifestyle of the prehistoric folk. Unfortunately, many rock shelters in the capital will be completely destroyed if proper measures are not taken to preserve them. TIAC has repeatedly asked the Capital Development Authority to at least fence the surroundings of the rock shelters so they do not become the victim of construction work. There are not enough resources to do proper excavations and research on these rock shelters, but they do need to be protected for the future. And as is often the case in our podcasts, here is your weekly story regarding Stonehenge. The British Highways Agency is to carry out major safety and improvement work at the Countess Roundabout on the A303 near Amesbury in Wiltshire. Work will take place 7 days a week during daylight hours, with 24-hour working being undertaken when practical. The scheme is expected to continue for approximately 17 weeks, with traffic being controlled in a number of ways, including lane closures and temporary traffic signalling. Through traffic will remain on the A303 for the duration of the scheme. However, local traffic using the A345, I hope you're noting down all these roads here, will be diverted when necessary and the agreed alternative route will be clearly signed off nearer the time. The work will result, and this is where we get to it, in diversions when visiting Stonehenge. As a result of these roadworks in the immediate area around Stonehenge, there will be closures, diversions and contraflow systems. Dates from Monday the 17th of January, the A344 will be closed with its junction at the A303. This closure is likely to be in place for up to 14 weeks, but we've been assured that all works are to be completed before the Easter weekend. If you're wanting to know about access to Stonehenge, I can't believe we actually turned into a traffic report here. So if you're arriving, visitors coming to Stonehenge will need to access the site from Airman's Cross, then drive down the A344 to Stonehenge. If you're leaving, when you're leaving Stonehenge, your vehicles will have to turn right. You got that, turn right out of the car park, then proceed back down to Airman's Cross before rejoining the A303 at Long Barrow. Well, moving away from this traffic jam and that traffic report, I actually strangely enjoyed doing that. Based on previous studies from the Carpathian Basin in Central Europe and new findings from Tell settlements in Hungary, new research shows detailed information of how societies worked. Klaus Unner, the author of the new thesis, describes the ways in which construction of tells indicates how power was centralised. Tell-building societies are named after the distinctive form of settlement with a high density of population and construction, which, over the course of time, accumulates thick cultural layers, which then take on the shape of low mounds. These societies would have had advanced economics based upon agricultural production and as animal husbandry, and would have traded regionally and also over long distances. And by exerting control and a degree of control over the other parts of the economy, it would have been possible for the leaders to finance political activities and power-exerting organisation. In his thesis, Unner shows how leaders were able to control settlements from the fortified tells. Due to their close proximity to rivers and other transport routes, these settlements would have been able to demand tribute, perhaps from passing trade, as well as act as intermediaries during exchanges of goods in the region. He suggests that a large tell is a manifestation of a successful society with a long history, and that such tells would have legitimised the social position of the elites and their right to rule. That's one of these stories where we're really getting into the theory of archaeology, but perhaps that's a discussion for another time. Now to Mexico. Archaeologists have been excavating at Tepoztlan for over a decade. A conference commemorating the 10th anniversary of the Tepoztlan Center for Historical Documentation was held recently. Prehispanic ceramics, human skeletons and vestiges of dwellings and ceremonial areas are part of the findings that have been registered by numerous archaeologists. The discoveries reveal that the site has been in use since 1500 BCE, the early pre-classic period. This was announced by archaeologist Giselle Canto from the National Institute of Anthropology and History, which has conducted several excavations in the 20 plots of the locality in various sizes, from 800 to even 70,000 square metres. The specialist detailed that among the different objects found were ceramic pieces, which correspond to the ceramic style named Tlatlico. You try saying that one. Found throughout the basin of Mexico, Morelos, and Puebla. They're not sure, however, which specific culture the ceramic pieces belong to, but will continue to look for more information. Archaeologist Jaime Resendiz remarked that the discovery of vessels, offerings, and sculptures also corresponding to the early pre-classic period. From this material, a 49-centimetre-high hollow feminine figurine stands out. Both archaeologists also mention the finds of pyrite mirror buried with one of the skeletons that, according to the studies conducted, corresponds to an early person of undetermined sex. The mirror was a transitional object that helped the departed to enter the other world by using the reflection on the surface. Associated with the same funeral were found Tlatlico-style vessels of the jug kind. These were used in rituals of birth and death and during the rite of passage from adolescence to adulthood. The vessels have a hole in the bottom, indicating that they were not utilitarian in function, but more ceremonial. Several terracotta and stone replicas of ceremonial buildings were also found in the remains. The archaeologist Giselle Canto considers it necessary to reformulate the site's chronology since the discoveries form a much more complex scenario, which is often the case. She concluded that after 10 years of research, they have the first archaeological findings of a society that reached up to 15,000 inhabitants with excellent organisation and a continually changing architectural style. The next story further shows how not so different we are from Neanderthals. Life expectancy was probably the same for early modern and late archaic humans and did not factor into the extinction of Neanderthals, so suggests Eric Trinkhaus from Washington University in his study Late Pleistocene Adult Mortality Patterns and Modern Human Establishment, which was published recently in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. In his work, Trinkhaus examined the fossil record to assess adult mortality for both groups that coexisted in different regions for roughly 150,000 years. He found that the proportions of adults aged 20 to 40 versus adults older than 40 were about the same for both early modern humans and Neanderthals. His conclusion is that if indeed there was a demographic advantage for early modern humans, at least during this transitional period, it must have been the result of increased fertility and or reduced immature mortality, as neither adult longevity nor a proposed modest shift in the developmental rates are likely to have played a role in this demographic transition. Right, well, since we've already spoken about wine, we thought it should be fair to talk about beer. Specially constructed early Celtic ditches, or trenches, previously excavated at Eberdingen Hochdorf, a 2,500-year-old settlement in Germany, were used to make high-quality barley malt, a key beer ingredient, so says archaeobotanist Hans-Peter Sticker of the University of Hohenheim. Thousands of charred barley grains unearthed in the ditch about a decade ago came from a large malt-making enterprise. He bases that conclusion on a close resemblance of the ancient grains to barley malt that he reproduced using several methods that Iron Age people might have used. He also compared the ancient grains to malt produced in modern facilities to determine just exactly how this would have affected the beer's taste. The oldest known beer residue in brewing facilities date back 5,500 years ago to the Middle East, but archaeological clues to beer's history are rare. At the Celtic site, Sitka proposes that the barley was soaked in these specially constructed trenches until it sprouted. Then grains were dried by lighting fires at the end of the trench, giving the malt a smoky taste and a darkened colour. Lactic acid bacteria, stimulated by the slow drying of the soaked grains, added sourness to the brew. Unlike modern beers, the Hochdorf brew probably contained spices such as mugwort, carrot seed and henbane, a plant that also makes beer more intoxicating. these additives would have given the Celtic beer a completely different taste than what we have used, what we're used to today. Heated stones placed in liquefied malt during the brewing process, which is a common practice later in Europe, would have added a caramelised flavour to this fermented Celtic drink. Sticker submits that suspects that fermentation was triggered by using yeast-coated brewing equipment or by adding honey or fruit, which both contain wild yeasts. Classics Professor Max Nelson of the University of Windsor in Canada, an authority on ancient beer, largely agrees with Sticker's conclusions. Other stages of the brewing occurred either at the site, as suggested by Sticker, or nearby. He notes that Sticker's experiments go a long way towards showing how precisely barley was malted in ancient times. Beer buffs today would regard Celtic beer as a strange brew, not only for its flavour, but also because it would have been cloudy, containing yeasty settlements that would have been imbibed at room temperature. I'm not sure that would have bothered some drinkers that I know. You know who you are. And finally, a large number of prehistoric sites have been found in Kerala in India. Archaeologists led by Mr. Kumar, director of the Geo-Heritage Archaeology Research Group, discovered socket remains, cupules and post holes, and several rocky outcrops at the foothills of Thenmala of the Western Ghats in the Palakkad zone. These post holes were used for the construction of pillared outdoor halls or pavilions used for rituals called mandapas. Out of the 13 post hole sites with 24 pillared halls identified by Mr. Kumar, 12 are in the rocky plateau, 3 to 5 kilometres from Thenmala. Another one is found at Palpulli, about 20 kilometres away. The sockets found on the wall of the rock shelter in the Thenmala Valley are for fixing beams for covering the top of it and for steps to reach the top. Similar post holes and rock surfaces at sites at Andhra Pradesh and in other areas suggest that these might have been part of a Neolithic settlement between 4000 to 1000 BCE. Unearthing Mesolithic artefacts and rock engravings as well as megalithic monuments in the area around the post hole sites clearly suggest that this was a highly populated area. Recent studies have revealed that the Palakkad district has several important prehistoric sites. The presence of a valley, granite hillocks, caves, natural rock shelters, rocky plateaus and vast plain, as well as the natural protection of the mountain ranges with medium temperatures, average rainfall, water storage in ponds, etc., would have made this an inviting place for prehistoric people. All the findings from this district will be published in research thesis in the Department of Studies and Geography, University of Mysore. Yes, well, don't forget about this news application that you can use on your iPhone, iPod Touch and iPad. Get yourself along to www.stonepages.com/app. And of course, keep up with the latest news from around the world with Past Horizons. www.pasthorizons.com, which also presents you with articles, project opportunities, videos, and of course, the fabulous archaeological tool store. None finer. Can I also remind people that there are new archaeological and heritage opportunities, as well as a UK heritage calendar, guidance section, and more to be found on Badger. www.bajr.org. More can always be found at Stonepages, of course. news.stonepages.com. So, thank you for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you return to us next week, and I think it's time for me to head outside into the sunshine.